Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Two Norwich podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
A friend of ours, Brian O'Donovan from Limerick City, Kate, is in the hot seat today. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's nice to be here. It's a privilege to be asked. I know that you aren't stuck for it. You know, I know that I have a story.
Yeah.
And I suppose it is a privilege to be able to sit here, this side of it, what I have experienced and what I'm experiencing today as well. Because, like, it doesn't, as I mentioned a few times on your podcast, like, this is an ongoing process. Like, there's no destination.
Yeah.
You know, so I do feel that it's right for me to do this today.
It's good to have you here, because the first time me and Timmy ever spoke in public, well, did any bit of public speaking, was at the Cork Alliance Centre Conference, which is a charity that support people who have been in prison. That would have helped us all here today. And we all spoke at that conference, and the president was there, among others. So it's great to have you here. But it's mad how things is after evolving since then, isn't it?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
But do you want to bring us back, I suppose, for the people that don't know, and tell us where you're from, what it was like growing up for you?
Yeah. So I'm from Limerick City. I'm from the posh side of Limerick City, actually.
Is there a posh side in Limerick City?
Hey, look, I think so. I think so. But, like, I come from a place called Carbley. I had a good upbringing. I was never short of anything, not to be honest. Like, I wasn't. My father, my mother were good, hard working people. I've one brother. And, you know, they were hard working people and stuff like that, but I never felt a part of that family. Never, from the get go.
You know why?
Yeah, man. Because in the searching of the soul, like, as things on in recovery, like, I realised stuff, you know. I was clinically dead when I was four from an epileptic fit. And I was lucky that there was a doctor down the road that was able to be there. And when I vomited on my sick and I was in the isolation unit and stuff like that, woke up with all the things around my chest. And looking back, man, I blame my parents for that. Why the fuck are you leaving me here? You know, I'm here on my own. And, you know, thinking back in therapy, and, like, I became institutionalised later on in life and stuff like that. And I found out these golden nuggets to why I was thinking this way, you know. And I suppose, yeah, I have a big family, like, relative-wise, you know. I think there was about 28 cousins and stuff like that. So I was always, they were good friends, they were my first kind of friends and stuff like that. And I suppose they became, over time, very successful people, do you know what I mean? What they are, and inspirational, you know.
Yeah.
Inspirational, but this inferior complex I live with, because I always compare myself to my brother. Always. You know, he got the most caps in the OIL rugby. So he never made it to Munster. He always went to the end of the trial. So I was always competing for that attention all the time with my parents, right? And I suppose something happened when I was 13. My cousin Barbara, God rest her soul, took her life. And I suppose, to the best of their knowledge, they thought it was best to tell me that she died from cancer. And I found out later one of my friends said, Jesus, I'll be your cousin or whatever. And she said she took her life, you know what I mean? And at the time, it was an offence and all that kind of stuff. And it pushed me so far away from my family because I never trusted them. You know what I mean? That was a biggie thing for me. And I repelled and I repented and I found, I thought I'd never take tablets, you know, because I'm not going down that road now, you know what I mean? And I suppose I became addicted to anything to take me away from myself and what I was feeling. And I suppose the crowd that I grew up around, like I was the type of addict that would rob you and then help you go look for it. No, that's the kind of person I became. And what I said, and I still stand by it, like my parents done the best they can with what they had, you know what I mean? Yeah. Because I'm also aware of generational stuff that I actually took on as a kid as well, which isn't my place to take on.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that until later in my life. So
obviously, like in school.
In school, it was good, like, talking about looking for attention. I can remember in primary school, I was a good kid, intelligent, like, I liked school, and there was this opportunities that I started fighting in school, and I was getting attention, and I loved the boys, and it was great. And after that, this came second year, just 13, 14, big change. I went to a rugby school and it was good. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I went in there. I had no interest in being there, to be honest. I had no interest. I lost all interest. Addiction had me by the gonads at that age, 13, 14.
What kind of drugs were you using at the time?
Solvents would have been my go-to. The reason why they wanted to go-to is because you couldn't smell them. You know, I couldn't smell the drink. You couldn't see that I was stoned from smoking the hash or not. That's how long ago I was and showing my age, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I never got close to anyone because of that incident. And I wasn't able to allow myself to get close to anyone because of that. I didn't trust no one. And found it very hard. You know, I used to drink and to get pumped out, you know. To extreme and like, you know, to be fair to my father, to give him credit, man, he picked me up in some states and brought me back, you know. And like the other side of it, I would have resented him from how he dealt with it. Do you know what I mean? But like that, I'm at peace with that all today and I have a great relationship with him today.
Yeah, yeah.
Because no matter what, he stuck by me. So did my mom.
Yeah.
What did the drink do for me?
At that age?
The drink made me feel part of.
Mm.
The drink made me feel part of. It allowed me be myself. I was afraid to be myself. I didn't know who the fuck I was. You know, I didn't even know where I was going, what I was doing, you know. It filled up that void within myself, man. And it was just like, I was doing mad stuff then to get the acceptance from the crowd, you know, drinking as much as I could and staying out. But for a finish, like, if I was to say, moving on from that start in school, moving on to about third year, Jonas, yeah. If I was drinking and I was caught, like, I was, like, fucked out, man. I was, like, literally, like, you're not coming in, you're the fucking... Because I used to leave people walk all over me in the street, go back then and take it out with my family.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know what to do, man. I didn't know how to verbalise it. I didn't have the capacity to be able to talk about it, that emotional. I didn't have it. That's, you know, I didn't feel it and stuff like that. So where I felt comfort was going to people that were caught up in addiction as well. They could identify with me. I could group together and learn that. And I suppose Robin was a big thing for me as well, to feed my addiction, my family thought, like, oh, well, if I don't give money, we won't go out and buy stuff. But sure, as you know yourselves, when you're in a fucking addiction, it doesn't matter by any means necessary. And I carried an awful lot of shame through school. Yeah, I was like, because I was in school, I was trying to make my way through addiction. And like, look, I apologise, and like, I held a lot of shame for that. You know, I apologise for that for anyone that's speaking, that's listening in, because I carried so much shame around that.
For robbing, is it?
For robbing, man. Because I know I wasn't brought up like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I wasn't brought up like that. And
must have been very difficult for your mother and father looking on.
Most definitely, man. They fucking killed them. My mother would say, I fucking just waiting for you to die. It'd be easier if you're dead. This is at fucking 15, 16 years old.
Not in Cork. If you said somebody that you went to a rugby school, their chances are you're fairly wealthy. Is it like that in Limerick too?
100%. It is. And look,
it's a privileged school.
I had a privileged fucking childhood, man. I know people on the journey of recovery that I've met, and like, you put your problems into the middle of a table, man. I'm the first one to back my own. Do you know what I mean?
Putting it actually.
100%.
But it also shows as well, doesn't happen to just fellas in council estates either.
No. And that's my kind of message here as well, James, because most definitely it does happen, and like I'm in there, I'm on the ground in those places at the moment trying to support, but that's for the later on in the podcast. Yeah. But like, for now, I suppose it does, like, and I thought I was the only fucking addict, man, at that age as well, because I actually ended up going to the support groups. A family intervention was made at 16, 17. They call it the 12-step, and the brat came out to the house, this woman, by fucking legend of a woman, came out. And I was going, how the fuck is this one an addict? Like, she doesn't, you know, and I understood, like, it wasn't about what you take, or I got to know it wasn't about what you take, it's what it does. You know, it's not about the substance, it's how I react to the substance.
Yeah.
And got brought to an all meeting and went into treatment. I was in treatment twice by the time I was 18.
Where'd you go?
Ashling.
Tipperary.
Up at Tipperary. I was in there for my 18th birthday. And, you know, I was only saying it the other night. Like, at least I can remember my 18th birthday, you know?
Yeah.
You know, at the time, I was going, fuck this, man. I'm only meant to be starting to drink now. Yeah. You know, I'm not, if I go in here and tell people I'm an addict, then they leave me alone, I'd be able to use. Yeah. You know? So that's 18.
Did you go there because your parents kind of coerced you into going?
I didn't go there for myself anyway, James. Yeah. You know, I was kind of getting, because when I seen the blue lights with the guards, like, it triggered something in me. Like, I got diagnosed with ADHD at that time as well. So it triggered me to react, like I was talking about earlier, when looking for acceptance from the lads. I'd go mad and I'd fucking do something stupid, whatever, do you know?
Mm.
And at the time, I could relate inside in the treatment centres and stuff like that, but I was only beginning, to be honest.
Very difficult for an 18-year-old at that stage, isn't it?
Well, there's
a lot of pain to happen before a penny drops.
We were only talking about coming down the road, you know.
So, like, you're after me to treatment now already twice and you're 18, you know. And we all know that drinking drugs block out our thinking. And even when we're not using, we're thinking about how we're going to get more money to be able to feed our habits. What was going on in your head even before the solvents came along to say that you were getting a bit of peace from drink, drugs and solvents? What was your head's, what kind of thoughts were you having about yourself and everybody around you?
Well, I hated myself, Timmy. You know, I hated myself for actually taking the drugs. I didn't know how to say it. You know, any kind of woman that got close, a girl that got close to me, I pushed her away. Because also, I suppose, after my mum had me, she had a hysterectomy, right? Which I learned later on in life that if a woman has a hysterectomy, she goes directly into menopause.
Mm-hmm.
So then therefore, which I also learned in counselling, you know, later on in life and stuff like that. And I was actually able to have a chat with my mum to see how she was around it after it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so yeah. It was nice. There's a lot of healing happening.
Yeah.
Do you know? A lot of healing happening. But back to that kid, when that happened, I was looking to be connected and I was being rejected. So it was...
People going through her own stuff, like...
Going through her own stuff, James, do you know? And more stuff on top of that, do you know? More stuff that you know, isn't my space to talk about, do you know?
Yeah. How did things progress?
They progressed...
When you got out of treatment?
Really rapidly, James. I can remember coming back in, so there was an expectation. Father was always kind of person that... You need to go to school, you need to go to college, you need to get a job, A, B and C. I had no more interest in going to college. I wanted money to provide for what I was fucking dealing with.
To get stoned.
Get stoned, man. To get, you know,
Black out.
But at the time, I didn't think it. That's, do you know what I mean? I didn't think that I was blacking out. I thought I was just being a part of the fucking, my social norms. You know, so, went back in the day I was 18 in there. I can remember getting my 18th birthday. Went back, I was allowed to go back in because I didn't want to be in school. At third year, I got offered to go to do an apprenticeship. Good with my hands, you know what I mean? Graft of all trades, master and none. And I didn't do a leaving cert, walked out. I said, fuck this, I'm not. And lo and behold, I was in a hostel a couple of weeks later. Thought I wasn't hurting anyone. You know, I thought like, no, I'm away from my family. You know, and I have to mention as well, like, my brother fucking suffered a lot as well, because a lot of the attention was on me growing up. The addict, like, in the family system. And my brother had to survive without no attention on him, you know? And that, I know, has to be hard. Mm-hmm. Because I was so self-centered, man, it all about me. You know, and to the very end, actually, to be honest. Mm. And I suppose after I got home, I was drinking with people 3 or 4 times the fucking age of me, and I was kind of going, not hurting no one. Do you know, not hurting no one. But soon I got, like, on probation and mediocre fucking charges and all that stupid fucking charges.
Do you know, while you were in the hostel?
Yeah. Right?
When you're in a hostel, like, you're open to every fucking drug. But when you're around your peers, you're only dabbling with the old fucking few E's and the coke. But when you're in a hostel, you're with people who are on the streets and they're at everything, you know, across the board. So, like, did everything start coming into your life at a young age when you were in the hostel?
20 years ago to me, I would have been in the hostel first, like, you know. So it was like, I would have taken anything.
Mm.
I was open to anything, like, just get me away from what I was feeling. Because I didn't know how to talk, I didn't know how to communicate. I wasn't a part of any group. Do you know what I mean? I knew when you got paid, so I'd be able to be around you then, like, you know? And that's the kind of way I was rolling for a while. I went into another treatment centre then in 2004, a 30-day programme, Minnesota model, and I was in there for to get out of jail, man, to be honest. I was, and but don't get me wrong, I got something from it. I mean, like, I got something from the adolescent programme. I learned something from it. Like, and you, like, they're talking about in the here and now, like, recovery capital and stuff like that. I gained some recovery capital in them places because the other word is sobriety sampling. So I was able to stay away abstinent for a certain block of time.
Yeah.
And I was, they call it in the rooms, the 30-day wonder. Was to pick up the bags, I got the badges. I go, how do I graduate out? How do I manipulate my way through this system to get out and go back to what we are using? Do you know what I mean? And
will you explain recovery capital for us?
I'll try my best anyway, James. Yeah. So recovery capital is, so, like, in the national drug strategy, right? It, especially say 2017 to
25
and supporting recovery.
Yes, so it was really focusing around recovery supports, right? And back then, and still to this day, it is getting better.
Yeah.
But back then there was very little supports for people that would have come out of treatment and would reintegrate back into society. You know, very little halfway houses. No, like the likes of Box and Clever. I know you had Mark on. There's Box and Clever after starting up in the Midwest now. And
I actually gave a talk up there, I remember.
Yes.
When they graduated, they invited me up to Limerick to the hotel to give a talk. But the recovery capital is like how a person can successfully recover and the different parts of it. So social capital, the connections you make with people, so that can be through a fellowship, like yes. In NAA, Smart Recovery, the cultural capital, what your life is like, what kind of culture are you around, like the people, places and things, like are you around pairs that are good for you, where there's a natural culture of employment and education, you know, the human capital then, you know, and like how's your health and stuff like that. But all these things contribute to like a good solid recovery. Whereas if you have the culture, if you have the social capital, and this is a good one, the fellas are with all the women and they're drinking coffee in every coffee shop in Cork, Limerick, but then they're neglecting like the other stuff, you know, they're more vulnerable to relapse. Whereas recovery capital is a more holistic kind of view of recovery, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, I thought that it was worth explaining for people that might be starting out in their recovery journey or wanting to kind of learn a little bit more. So, and it's good what you said as well, because there's no such thing as a wasted treatment.
No.
Yeah.
Because you learn stuff along the way. Little nuggets are planted, little seeds are planted, and then you get mature enough to kind of tap into it, you know?
Yeah, it's like when you're in treatment and you come out of treatment back then, you don't know the benefit of it. But when you look back now, you can understand the benefit of it.
Yes.
It's like looking at somebody who's been in and out of prison all their lives, and prison has been the one thing that has given them the bit of respite away from the streets and the addiction. And every time they go into prison, they build themselves back up, they do a bit of exercise, and they get healthy and they're away from drugs. Without that in their lives, without prison in their lives, they were probably dying because of the abuse they're putting into their bodies. So, like what you're saying is very important. You know, the different. It's not that it's for no good. There is a massive benefit even getting treatment at a young age, and I can relate to treatment at a young age. I would have been to 2 treatment centres before I was even 18. I would have spent my 18 birthday in treatment, and it's a tough thing because you're looking at all the 18-year-olds waiting until they're 18 to get their passport and go in town and go for a legal first drink.
Yeah.
You miss out on all that. You miss out on all that. But how did it continue from there, Brian, after that treatment? Because that treatment said it sounds like you were just after getting a little bit of insight maybe into addiction.
I did. I got introduced to so the Minnesota model, for anyone that doesn't know, like, is the first 5 steps of the AA or NAA fellowship, you know. And
which was a 28-day program.
Yes, 28-day program. But my friend, obviously, all that can happen in 28 days, the sun will revolve around the moon, you know, because I know it's an intense program and all that, and hats off, but like foundation, like 2 years, they give suggestions in the first 2 years of recovery for very good reason. Like, my biggest downfall was women, like, in early recovery before, you know, I'd fall in love with the chairman.
Yeah.
No, I would. When that's, the feel, get the feelings back.
What you're saying, you know.
The legs and the
gym. Oh, man. Yeah. Tell you.
And it's a very, very big thing in for both men and women is the cross addiction. They fill that void where when we stop drinking and drugging, we're left with the head.
Yes.
But if you're going away at chasing a man or a woman, like, your thinking is occupied around that now, so you're still escaping the head. You're
looking for something external outside of you to fill the void.
To fill the void. It's just substituting, really, you know, later on, looking, reflecting back on it, you know. And look, at the end of the day, I done the best I could with what the awareness that I had at the time. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's all learning. Do you know, it's all, nothing is lost on this journey we call life. No, it's not, you know, and stuff like that. So, like, back to what you were saying about where did it go after that? So that's 2004. We're in fucking 23. There's a few years to cover. So, you know, usually I have 15 minutes to sum up this within an old chair, like, but at least I have the space tonight to kind of explore it.
Yeah.
And it's a privilege, like I said earlier on. So after that, I knew drugs is the problem. No, I says, fuck that. Every time I pick up drugs, I go on a mad binge and consequences happen. So I stopped taking drugs, started drinking. And I can remember how devious and how much denial I was in. I was going to my aftercare each week. And the only time I wasn't getting checked was the night I was coming home from aftercare. So that was the night I was drinking the nagging. Fuck it. To get it into me in the way back. You know, and that's for me when I started to become problematic. You know, started to get a bit more dependent. You know, I was moving away from problematic and moving into dependent. You know, that I needed something. Even though, I can remember going to meetings, bringing a joint with me in the car, bringing it back after the meeting. And to be honest, I got there. It gave me a break for the hour. No, the only requirement for a membership in a fellowship is a desire. Is that you don't have to be stopped. You only want it. You only need to want it. You know, so they're important nuggets for people as well, because people think like that. Because like another thing as well, that abstinence is one form of recovery. Like, you know, there's people that are living quality lives that, like, recovery is even exclusion in itself now. Because, like, who's to say one's recovery has to be the same as another?
We got a letter one time off somebody from Kerry, where they were saying that they were in the fellowship now years and years, like, but that we were diluting the message of recovery and stuff like that. But, like, and we respect them where they come from. Because obviously they feel very attached to the program there and stuff like that. But like, we have to respect other people then. And if methadone is a part of their story and they're still living a quality life or a medication or something and they're still in a better place than they were, they're recovering too. And maybe they mightn't get the abstinence that we have, but if they're in a better quality life, they can look after their kids or go to work. Sure, do you know what I mean? That's they're recovering. It's on a continuum, you know? It's on a scale.
You said it, James. Improve one's quality of life.
Yeah. And that's what we wanted.
It's not that anyone wants, you know?
Yeah.
It really is, you know? And I suppose I also learnt after that Minnesota model that, right, I can go away to the bitter ends and build myself back up when I got the treatment. So I done started to do the go to the bitter ends, come back. I was in a convert three times as well.
Rory?
Yeah, so I done the programme once and the other two times I was just in there for the detox and tried to get better and
I'd drugs to be on at this stage, you know, bro, and drink.
So the first two times I was the ease, the coke, the tablets and the drink. And the last time before I got in there, I can remember I thought there was something more wrong to me than just being an addict.
Yeah.
And it becomes a lonely fucking journey in them places. Kind of really like, and that's where I started to see what my capabilities are. Right, Brian, you're here on your own. And I don't forget people who were there for me in them kind of times. Do you know what I mean? And I suppose I was told by the psychiatrist, you're never going to be able to come off this medication. But sure, I have that mind where I'm going to go, okay, if I keep getting more medication, I'm going to get more affected from it. Because if I still do A, B and C, I'll be able to get more effective from it. I went around like a zombie, man. You know, and look.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
At that time, was I displaying symptoms of bipolar? Maybe I was. Was I displaying symptoms of depression? Maybe I was. But who has the right to make that call in one person's life? Like,
what age, Ra?
Age, about 23, 24, I'd say. About 23,
how long were you in the institution for?
All in all, I was in there for 12 months.
Fuck it, that's a long time.
It's a long
time. What was it like in there?
There was people in there, James, that were going in, going on medication to come off medication.
Well, you're only 23 now, right? You're after doing a lot of time in institutions already, like four or five treatment, like between Rory three times, the Aisling Hall, and there was two as a young fella, Rory three times, now 12 months here. You're only 23, that's a long time. You're becoming institutionalised a little bit.
Most definitely, man.
I'm looking at your face here, your whole demeanour, like, do you feel a bit of compassion for that person?
Yeah, man, I love that person, I mean, I do, man, do you know, I've done a lot of work on myself, I feel emotional, I feel raw, but you know what, man, I feel human, do you know what I mean? It's this is my life. A few of my friends, like, I know that I said that I kind of pulled away from a lot of people, but a few people, like, I would have stayed in contact, and I go, Brian, why don't you have fun write a book, like, kind of going, nah, maybe a thesis, or maybe a fucking, you know, a mass, or whatever, but, like, I don't know, man, and I said it earlier on the podcast, it's not about social status, it really fucking isn't, man, it's about passing on my story, man, because, like, how many people are caught up in institutions at the moment and being shut up by medication, and I'm not here saying that there isn't a need for medication.
It's helpful for some.
Most definitely, James.
Do you think you were written off with the medication at a young age? Or do you think it was what you needed at the time?
I do believe that there was a need for me to take it at the time. Mm. I genuinely do.
Did you lose yourself?
Didn't want to be here, man.
I know that. But even though you still didn't want to be here, okay, you still felt things. You still felt emotions. And you still fucking noticed the mad head. And that's consciousness. Even though you're unaware of it, we still feel it. But when you're heavily medicated, it's like a different, what the fuck is going on? Who am I, like? Yeah. I'm not feeling all the madness anymore. This isn't really, like, all this stuff is blocking over everything. So it's like, it's like, I don't know, what's that phrase? Like, it's not that you're stuck in limbo. It's like repairing, covering one thing with something else. You know, you're gone from where you're struggling with your mental health and you can't cope with your emotional state and you and the thoughts that are going in your head. But then you're put on heavily dosed with meds, and it's like you're missing this part of yourself that you can actually feel, and you're not liking this in the way you feel because you know it's not real.
Mm.
And there's a bit of conflict then, you know, and I know that because of my own situation. You know,
yes.
I didn't feel like myself anymore, even though this was supposed to be helping me. But I actually felt I needed to go back to this tough place where I was really, really in a bad, bad place, and my head was mad, but it was real. This wasn't real, because I wasn't myself. If this madness here felt look more like myself, where the head was mad and I was feeling all these powerful emotions like fear, shame and guilt and everything else, but it was my reality, and I knew I was going to grow back here if I was able to accept my situation and feel it, you know. So I decided to go back here.
Mm.
But I used the kind of practical things like the meditation, you know, the therapy. Yes. Now, I'm not saying somebody that's on medication should stop, go to your doctor or whatever. I went to my doctor and I stopped. But was that a similar kind of way you felt?
So I can remember, I'm glad you started speaking, because I was able to think what I was trying to reflect back, what was after happening after that. I can remember I came back to Limerick, and a gentleman gave me an opportunity as a trade, doing a mechanics trade. And I was doing well for some time, and I enjoyed the trade, and like a fucking jack of all trades, you know what I mean? I taught my hand to handing and stuff like that, and really enjoyed it. But I can remember I was able to manage the drugs, right? But anytime I drank, then my parents were fucking, shit, he's back at it, and it fucked me out. So I can remember being in phase two in the trade. I was sleeping rough. I was sleeping in the building site, fiberglass over me, going to my trade every day, washing myself in the sink, right? Has anything like that happened since my addiction has stopped? No, it hasn't. So, you know, leave that. I do. And that's how we met first, was that piece of the spent convictions, you know. It's a fucking taboo subject, you know. And
did you go to Cork Prison or Limerick Prison?
No, Limerick Prison.
And did you come to Cork then when you got out?
I went to Dunbrory. I went to Cork, done another half a house in Cork.
Yeah.
And
stayed.
9 months clean. I thought I had the world solved, man. I knew everything what was going on, right? And I can remember the owner of the boss came in, you know, the way you give your good best look speech. He goes, "Brian, you haven't changed one bit." Just go up to us, "What you mean?" I said, "I'm 9 months clean, you know, all this kind of bravado and ego and all that kind of stuff." And he goes, "If you don't change, you're gonna fall flat in your face." And today I'm grateful for him to be able to say
it. Give you honest feedback.
100%, Japs. Yeah. You know.
And did you fall flat in your face?
I did.
Did you stay in Cork?
I did. And the drugs changed.
What kind of drugs were you using?
The tablets. And I can remember I started into heroin. And it was great. Loved it.
James, you always explain heroin as in being wrapped in a cuddly blanket.
It is like we were up Dublin there a couple of weeks ago, and we see the addiction up there. People goofed off down alleyways, down steps. But as bad as it looks, they've never felt better, because everything is blocked out, isn't it? And any of the shit that's going on for you, it just blocks it. It just numbs you.
And my friend of mine, I always says it, like, it's like the hug your mother never gave you. No, you know, because it does give it to you. And like,
what was your life like when you got strung out in the jail?
I was in and out. So I went to another treatment centre. I was jumping between the treatment centre out in Blarney and into the
Nuns.
Yeah, and St. Vincent's Hostel. And like I've more, I was only telling Graham on the way down, like I've more addresses in Cork City than I do in Limerick, like. You know, I lived in Grattan Hill, lived in the I lived only around the corner from here actually as well. Lived in Ballincollig, lived in Toker, lived in Turner's Cross.
I can see where you went wrong. You were always on the south side. You should have come up the north side with it looking after you.
But you know what, gents? I did go up the north side. And I suppose when I was down here, I can remember I was engaging with the services and I remember that my probation officer at the time, Maria, I think her name was.
I actually know Maria, yeah.
Maria Walsh.
Maria Walsh, that's who it was, no?
As well.
And I can remember going up there, right? And she says, well, who are you? And coming from a place where there was institutions, Brian, I'm an addict. She goes, what? What else are you like? What do you, like, yeah. Who are you? I didn't have a fucking clue, man. Didn't know who I was, didn't know what I liked, didn't know, you know, what I was into, what I wasn't into.
What colour you liked.
What colours,
what
man.
Music you liked.
I didn't know I was entitled to all that kind of stuff. You know, and I can remember I was linked in with Cork Alliance, hey, man, they were like my family down here in Cork, to be honest. They give them a shout out. They were like, you know yourselves, you've engaged with them. And I suppose I was always to be there. I wasn't judged. I wasn't judged. I used to go in there and go in there as best I could. And I went to Max Sweeney College up in North Side as well.
Town Max Sweeney.
I was saying to Brian there as well before the podcast. I'd done a coaching course up there, in rugby, because I was handy at the rugby, man, to be fair. You know, I was up against a few internationals and stuff in school, but holding on an addiction, I suppose, you know, it was hard, like, but.
But how, do you know, when you're in Cork and you're strung up in the gear and you're moving around, like, what was the turning point? How did it come to a head?
Right, how it came to a head, man, it was 2013, right? My mother was after getting diagnosed with cancer. My father was.
Two of them.
My mother got diagnosed with cancer, and shortly after, from the stress of me being self-centered, my father. Not only me, but I know that I did have a huge impact. But how self-centered I was, I can remember him coming down to Cork, because she got her treatment down in Cork, because it was the breast clinic or just around the corner.
Yeah.
I couldn't make it to meet her, because I had to go in and get myself sorted before I met her and stuff like that.
It needed
to score, but like, I suppose I was a poly drug user, so I picked up all this kind of language.
A poly drug user
is when I was open to anything. To take me away from the pain I was feeling.
It wasn't just one specific drug.
Absolutely not, man.
Everything.
Alcohol and I thought, right, to me, I thought if I only take heroin for 2 days, and I only take coke for 2 days, and I only drink for 2 days, I'm only a recreational user. I didn't think
mad
of
the head. This isn't
mad.
Mad. I didn't think I was an addict either, or an alcoholic, because my binges were 2-3 week binges, where I was flat out. And then I'd be given the ultimatum to start for 3 or 4 weeks to get back into the house, so I'd have a roof over my head. Yeah. And I thought I wasn't an addict either over the same stuff. You know, it's mad how our thinking can bring in denial.
So I can remember that, right, when my mum was diagnosed with a cancer, and I goes, man, I have to stop making it about me. There's people that fucking love the bones of me, man, and they're fucking dying in front of my eyes. I need to do something here. I was down, it was the 17th of December, last time I had my first drink was 2 cans of Druids, right? And my last drink was a can of Linden Village. I was a canaholic. I wasn't an alcoholic, you know what I mean? I never got to the bars. I always drank down the fucking back streets. Mm. I never experienced what social. I never had a drink with my father, my mother, or my brother. There's a lot of lost down, man, around that kind of stuff.
You were never invited to parties. You never went to weddings.
Nah, man. I'm getting invited to there, right? I mean, do you know what I mean?
So am I.
Do you know what I mean? And it's good, you know, and it's good. And then, you know, it's, I suppose we're the turning point for me, James, because I know that we're fucking rambling, but it's my story, and I suppose it's important to give myself that time to explain it, because it is all the time. You know, it's cost me enough. It's cost me and my loved ones enough for me to sit down to see, share my experience.
But when you met your mum, your father was unwell, your mum was unwell, you couldn't make it to meet her. There was a lot of guilt. The penny was dropping. What did you do?
So, Jayla made an intervention with me. I was in an apartment over the other side of the river. I thought it was grand, man. I thought it was all right. I was going to counselling once a week. But there was pins all around me. I didn't see it, man. I was delusional. I was blinded by it. And she gave me the alternative because I thought I was so self-righteous, because that comes with addiction and ignorance and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't pay my rent. So she said, you have two choices. You can go back to the hostel and be blacklisted with the rent allowance, or you can ring a treatment centre and go in. So I said, right, I didn't think I was going to get it, lads. I thought I was beyond the help because all the times I've been in there. Mm. So I rang. It took me 3 months to get into that place. And I was going from the hostel. I stopped drinking in the hostel. I stopped using heroin in the hostel. I can remember being in the doctor's clinic, and he's saying, right, give me your 3 urines. I want to put you on the methadone. I says, look, doc, give me one more day, will you? I'm going to have to fucking stand it off for another fucking 2 days. If we don't get off it, this, I'll be back to you next week. And touch one, man. I haven't touched it today. But like I was saying to you before the podcast, to me, I smelt it today.
Yeah.
And it smells as good today as it did when I left it.
That's because it's not the smell you're attracted to, it's the feeling.
100%.
It's the feeling that it will give you. And I say the feeling, it's lack of feeling anything.
But the smell triggers that then.
Yeah.
It does. But I'm also aware that it's just the feeling. Do you know what? It's just the feeling. And I suppose that's when I went to Dublin, I started to emotionally regulate myself, and I thought I made the wrong choice because I went in, it was like an open prison. So it was me revisiting all my past.
When you went to Dublin, when you
went to Dublin, and coal mine went up.
Oh, yeah.
And I was blessed for the time that the workers were there, man, the people that were there. I shared some of the best experiences of my life. So. And I'd stay at our cliques, because you know yourself in treatment centers, there's cliques, there's bravado, there's ego, there's prison, all that kind of stuff, and there's different intentions. And so be it. It doesn't matter why you're going to treatment, why you stay there is the real reason.
Yeah.
So I got to know myself, got to know my rage, got to know that it wasn't rage, it was hurt. And I had to go back on medication there as well. I had a nervous breakdown. And
you had a nervous breakdown.
What
did that involve? That nervous breakdown.
Is that a bipolar episode, or is this explain a nervous breakdown to us?
Sorry. So I actually had to come off all that medication. That being on that medication nearly stopped me going into coal mine. And at the time, there was a big report out on the same institution about giving psychiatric medication to patients with, fucking wrongly, right? Yeah. That stopped me from going into treatment. And if it was only for certain individuals up in that organisation that took the chance with me. Because I had to come off it to go to Brody as well before I came to Cork a couple of years before.
Because it's a dual diagnosis,
which is
mental health and addiction.
Yes.
And they work in silos. And if you have both, you're kind of snookered for a long time.
Very much.
But aren't they so kind of like...
They can't be disconnected,
Yeah,
but a lot of treatment centres won't take people on psychiatric medication.
And
so you had to come off the medication to go into treatment.
I had to go off the medication to go into treatment.
And you had an episode in there.
had an episode in there, and I was lucky enough for the I was lucky enough where I was at myself. I had a good doctor down here in Cork as well that fucking gave me the time of day and actually listened to what I was saying. And I hope he's listening. I forget his name, but he was a fucking gentleman, and he I had a good relationship with him. And I haven't had good relationships with doctors because I like lack of education, just put it like that, like lack of education, but I have come across some good doctors, and the good there was another good doctor up at Dublin at the time, and I can remember I went on that medication, and I suppose we speak about recovery, and it's about being honest with oneself and being genuine and kind of where it's at. So I said, look, I want to go on, I'll go on this mood stabilizer for a certain amount of time, and it'll be I want to come off it though eventually. And she said, that's cool, no problem. So I did, you know, when I needed to, and I respected that because I know I don't need to play the hero anymore. Look at me, I'm a fucking, I'm a staunch addict, I mean, I don't even call myself an addict no more when I identify myself when I attend a meeting. And I don't need to. I know exactly who and what I am and what I had been and where I've come from.
Trump, you're a great example of not giving up. Mm-hmm. And if one thing don't work, trying something else and trying it again and keep going and not giving up.
And just to reaffirm what James is after saying there, like how many treatment centres weigh in until this says time? Is it 5, 6, 7?
A lot of and a few times, man, because I suppose I would have stepped in these places a few times then as well, you know, so I... It's a last count, man.
A lot, anyway.
And that's just saying, don't ever give up.
No.
Don't
absolutely ever give up. No.
Doesn't matter if you don't get it the first, second, third, fourth time.
No.
When you get it, you get it.
Yeah.
And you'll only know then. But every single time it helps you to get in your
place. And I started pushing myself out of the comfort zone, man. I can remember being up in after the program, right? When I learned how to deal with my emotions, I had to start doing things differently. I can remember someone up there, and because I haven't mentioned drop names, yeah, because I fucking know where, because I know a handful of people, let's say, and I don't want to name them, do you know what I mean? But the people that it's all good. But what I can remember, I had to look at what I was going to do to me, because if you think about like it's all about making money and social capital and stuff like that, but like to make money all my life, I manipulated. So I needed to look at something. What do I need to center myself in this and stay steady in my life and actually progress in a career that I know about? And I suppose I have a lot of hours in counseling rooms, put it that way, you know. And I've learned a lot from people who've come across me.
Through the harness, to live the experience that you have done through the years.
And also the stuff that professionals have taught me.
Did you go to college?
I went to Liberties after that to do the social studies, right? And I walked into Trinity, man, thinking it was Liberties. First day of college.
What's Liberties, like a college?
Liberties of VTEC 5 college, right?
Yeah, for education.
And Trinity would be...
Third level.
Yeah, third level, right? So, man, I was here, I'm starting college today, you know what I mean? I put on my glad rags, I was fucking feeling 100%. I was sure, like, you're starting here. I go, yeah, man, social studies. And I said, no, that is down the road, down Liberties. But I really enjoyed it, man. You know, I really enjoyed it. I then got into a relationship after 2 years. Suggested thing. They were a downfall of mine. She was from down the country, right? And in recovery. I decided to go to UL, University of Limerick. And I went
to study what?
To study the addiction studies.
Yeah.
Because I know a bit about it. I didn't feel like I was losing, do you know what I mean? Because it's a big ask to someone to ask to come away from what you've to be doing all your life. You know, it's a big ask. So I went in there. It was a miracle I was even showing up. Do you know what I mean? I got marks in the VTEC, but when I got there, I didn't really give a shit about the marks. I was kind of going, it's a miracle I'm here. I'm here, like, academically. I wasn't academic at the time.
But
you
did you get through the course?
Got through the course, man. Got through the course.
Did you start working in the services?
Started volunteering, James. started volunteering
in Limerick.
In adolescent addiction treatment centre, and I never thought I'd work with young fellas, like, you know what I mean, and it was great, and I started enjoying what I was doing, and then, like we were talking before the podcast, Tim, about I was still doing a landscaping business on the side because volunteering doesn't pay, and kept persistent, man. I got offered jobs, went for interview, was offered a job, and actually rang me back and said, actually, no, you have to come in, you're vetting, not there, not happy. So I actually rang the superintendent because it was a Garda diversion project. And it's funny how the universe works, right? Because I rang the superintendent and goes, what's the point of story, man? I'm after one change in my life. Do you know? Oh, well, it's a discretionary thing. You know, it's down to the organisation and stuff like that. So I says, fuck that. No, I need to take a step back from this because me, early recovery, you know, the relationship had subsided. That it didn't work out. I was renting. I got an apartment. I was renting a granny flat, and I went for an interview with another probation organisation, right? And I got the job, you know what I mean? And they gave me the people, gave me an opportunity, and they didn't fucking penalise me for that part of my life. And because they'd mentioned it, said, was that a part of your addiction? Yeah, it was. Okay, we can leave that there and box that off. Because they understood it was restorative practice at its fucking best.
That was me. Yeah. That's like,
do you know,
that's how it should be for everybody.
Yeah. Why do you know, it's the people don't realise how hard we work. Like,
do you want to leave that organisation out of the conversation, or do you think they should be notified?
Do you know what, man? I won't, because I'm trying not to. Do you know? Trying not to. They know when they listen, they'll know who they are.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think they should be held and praised for the way that they actually
100%. And that, do you know?
That's my 2 points on it.
And what's your life like today, Brian?
So my life like today, man, I'm a homeowner today, James. Yeah, I'm a homeowner, man. Know what I mean? And I'm in a healthy relationship, probably the healthiest relationship I've ever been in. Nothing got to do with addiction. Enjoying it. I'm working in a new service now, harm reduction service, low threshold service, really thoroughly enjoying it. It's I never thought I could work what I'm working in. My experience, but like that, I don't see the substance, man. I see the pain. I look past it. I look past the substance, see the pain, because that's all it was for me, man. It was holding my pain together for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thoroughly enjoying, like, I can be myself in work, James.
Yeah. You're not trying to hide your past.
Or... Absolutely not, man. I'm an open book, like.
Yeah, and like, in saying, anyway after this.
Yeah, for sure, look. But in saying that, like, that organisation had the same attitude.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because people realise that people do well.
Yeah, the capacity to change.
You know,
they also understand the importance of putting somebody with lived experience into the position you're in today, because they knew how that would benefit people that are going to use the service, and I think that's very important as well to mention.
Yeah. Before we wrap it up, have you any advice for somebody maybe that's going in and out of institutions, be they psychiatric prisons or addiction, and feel like that they're never going to get it?
So I always say it, man, I don't give a voice. I don't tell anyone how to live their life. But what I would suggest is that there is services around. There's more services now than there ever was. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to fucking to start link. Don't do it. You can do it on your own, but you don't have to do it on your own.
It's okay to ask for help.
100%, man. Yeah. And keep asking for it. I still need as much support today
as I had the first day.
Because the difference from you not asking for help and asking for help is possibly whether you live or die.
Yeah.
Man, life and death, to me, simple as that.
And if people want to know, I suppose, what services is in their area, they can drop us an email, info@twonarries.com.
And even up in the Midwest there as well, man. We get the details in.
We can signpost people.
Signpost, because there's a lot more organisations now than there ever was.
Yeah.
You know.
Pleasure talking to you, Brian.
Likewise.
Thanks a million for your time. Thanks for sharing.
Nice one.
And thank you. It was a pleasure and great to see you doing well. And sure, we'll reconnect online.
Thanks. Nice one.
Thanks a million, boys.
God bless, man.
Well done, boys.
Nice one.
Well done.
Sound.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.